It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are, off and running on this, the 8th day of December 2020. There are 23 days remaining in this misery of a trip around the sun. And, yeah, I put in a nicotine pouch right before airtime. You would think I would learn. Sorry. We'll just have to let it pass. But, you know, I like to get that little nicotine cool breeze. You know, in order not to smoke. So maybe it'll go away. But anyway, there are 23 days remaining in this miserable year, a trip around the sun. And 43 days left until 2021 really begins. Now, I'm not talking about December 31st, I'm talking about January 20th. On the other hand, there are 28 days, exactly 4 weeks, between now and January 5th. Beat you to the punch, Lou. The special runoff election in Georgia, in which we ask ourselves every day, what have you done to try to make things better, try to help John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock win those two Senate seats? And hopefully we are doing something. Because, among other things, Nitwit Nero's doing something. Oh, yeah. COVID Caligula is doing everything he can to help help elect John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. He's been attacking Republicans for a while, Nitwit Nero has. Yesterday, he said it would be Republicans in Georgia's fault if Chicken Perdue and Attila Loeffler lose their respective seats. And today, he went after the lieutenant governor of Georgia.
Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan is a rhino, never Trumper, who got himself elected as LG.
Really? He got himself elected as an appliance corporation? Son of a gun.
Got himself elected as LG by falsely claiming to be pro-Trump, too dumb or corrupt to recognize massive evidence of fraud in Georgia, and should be replaced.
Shh. Don't anybody tell Nitwit Nero, but Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan is maggot through and through. And he's also not on the ballot. Nitwit Nero is so stupid. He is, in fact, a nitwit. Mm-hmm. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. So thanks to our eighth day of the month subscribers. That means thanks to Marsha, and thanks to Nancy, and thanks to Sue back in the great Northwest where she belongs, and thanks to Brendan, and thank you to Dwayne. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you as well to our buddy Bob in North Carolina, I overlooked his subscription yesterday, and it's the second month in a row I've done that, and I figured out in conjunction with Bob that it's because of the way PayPal color codes its entries. But this time, well, thank you, Bob. Thank you for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you all for your partial sponsorships. And so where does that leave us in terms of fundraising for the evening? Well, it leaves us at $740. $740 to come to. Okay, so here's how it breaks down. There's $140 needed to finish last week's fundraising. So $140 knocks out last Friday's goal. And then there's yesterday and today. So for a grand total of $740 to go to get even with where we need to be. Okay? Okay. Nice to see someone else with Sparkle Fart Purity Brigade problems, says Steve in New York. Yeah, let it pass, says James. Don't swallow it. Oh, no, I'm not going to swallow it. There's a nerve that nicotine triggers, and that's where the nick-ups come from. Sheesh. So it is Trump-tanic Tuesday. Let's see. Let me just for the fun of it. Let's see. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6 Trump-tanic Tuesdays left, after which we go back to Titanic Tuesdays. Just 6. After this afternoon, this evening, wherever you are. So by all means, COVID Caligula, continue to attack Republicans in Georgia. Maybe they'll figure out who you are. And maybe along the way, you will nonetheless do a fair amount of damage. One can only hope.
Rhinos, Brian Kemp, and Jeff Duncan, and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger will be solely responsible for the potential loss of our 2 great senators from Georgia. Won't call a special session or check for signature verification. People are angry.
Shut up, you fucking toddler. And, you know, eventually we'll be able to say that to him, Permanente-like. And yes, it is the 8th day of December, and exactly 40 years ago this evening, I was a pimply-faced little gospel DJ ripping copy off the UPI machine, as we have discussed recently. And UPI, I believe, sent 7 bells. There was a bell system. Ding, 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 ding. Ding, 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 but it went ding, 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 and I was waiting for 8, 9, and 10 because that was the signal to crawl under the desk, put your head between your legs, and kiss your ass goodbye because the Ruskies had pushed the button down. That or there was a communist tornado on the way to Northwest Alabama, but it stopped at 7. And I went in and I pulled off the copy, and it said that John Lennon had been shot outside his home at the Dakota Building in New York City. Initially, it said he had been shot. There would be another alert shortly thereafter saying that John Lennon was dead. And as I mentioned a few nights ago, I kept that copy. I don't know where it is now, but. And the ink has probably completely disappeared from it, though some sort of X-ray, whatever technology could probably make it reappear. But that was a moving moment. And you know, I broke in, I announced it, and damn near got fired for it because, of course, John Lennon was not a Christian, and John Lennon was a devil worshiper, and didn't anybody need to know or care about what happened to a devil worshiper like John Lennon, who said he was bigger than Christ. But something else was happening that same day, December the 8th, 1980, a little baby was entering the world. And that little baby would grow up to become our buddy, Jeremy, from the Green Mountain State, Vermont. And happy birthday to you, Jeremy, and I hope you've had a good day, and I hope you have an even better one going forward into the evening, and may next year's be 100 times as fantastic, and maybe we'll be past all of this godforsaken plague by then. So many happy returns to our good friend, Jeremy in Vermont. Kenneth from Portland writing in. Yeah, quick note. RIP to American hero and West Virginia's own Chuck Yeager. And RIP eternal rebel genius John Lennon. He's greatly missed. What a stupid, senseless, evil, soul-crushing, heartbreaking murder. Fuck Mark David Chapman all to hell for all eternity. Thanks as always, and happy holidays. Happy holidays to you too, Kenneth. Yeah, there were a lot of there was a sense that something more than just John Lennon died on December 8th, 1980. For at least one generation, it felt a little bit like maybe the murder of John Kennedy. Because an era went. Sure, we still had George and Ringo and Paul and Mick and Keith. Was Keith Moon gone by then? I can't recall. But, you know, Pete and Roger and, yeah. But, well, as Don McLean put it, the day the music died, although that was about the plane crash that took Buddy Holly, but it got new relevance on December 8th, 1980. But one door closes, another opens. And so we have happy birthday wishes to send out to Jeremy. Must be kind of weird having that for your birthday. But, yeah, happy birthday, Jeremy. And this as well. Bob! Monday Night Football. Everybody's got their mind on the same thing. On December 3rd, 1979, many of us heard the horrible announcement of the 11 people trampled at the Riverfront Coliseum while watching Monday Night Football. I mean, they weren't watching Monday Night Football at the Riverfront Coliseum. They were there for a Who concert. I mean, we're getting our metaphors a little mixed up. But, yes, it was announced on Monday Night Football. Almost to the day, one year later, on this, the 8th day of December, 1980, many of us also heard on Monday Night Football at about 11:30 Eastern that John Lennon had been shot and killed. 2 years in a row, in early December, Monday Night Football brought some really bad news to many Americans. As it turned out, tens of millions of Americans said this is where they first heard the news about John Lennon having been shot to death. And it was, as Joey notes, absolutely shocking. Imagine, see what he did there, this. Here comes Jeffrey with the goddess of irony working overtime. Jeffrey wants to talk about the kicker to the story. One moment. I think that clip still exists. Yeah, here it is. It was an otherwise forgettable game between the Dolphins and what appears to be the Patriots. And this is Howard Cosell. Back when, love him or hate him, football announcers, TV sports announcers, had actual personalities.
But it's suddenly been placed in total perspective for us. I'll finish this. They're in the hurry-up offense.
Third down, 4. Foreman. It'll be fourth down. Kavanaugh will let it run down for one final attempt. He'll let the seconds tick off to give Miami no opportunity whatsoever. Timeout is called. 3 seconds remaining. John Smith is on the line. And I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which in duty bound we had to take. Frank?
Indeed it is. 3 seconds remain. John Smith.
Off the hands of Rose, the tight end. Alerting Nat Moore got the touchdown. They blocked the field goal attempt of John Smith. Now they battle in overtime. Delvin Williams. Taken quickly there. It was number 85, Julius Adams. Gain of a yard.
It'll be 3rd and 7.
In case the folks missed the earlier news flash, ABC News has confirmed that John Lennon, a member of the famed Beatles, maybe the best known member, was shot twice in the back outside of his apartment building in the west side of New York tonight, rushed to the Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. An unspeakable tragedy. Details on Nightline 30 minutes after the end of this contest.
Tony Nathan, single setback. 3rd down 7.
Yeah. Because, among other things, Howard Cosell had interviewed John Lennon on a number of occasions. But back to Giraffe. Giraffe wants to talk about the kicker to the story, explaining in his most eloquent King's English, yes, the kicker to the story was this. Just as Howard Cosell was announcing the terrible tragedy of Lennon's death during the football game, the television camera was focused upon none other than the kicker of the New England Patriots, one John Smith. As per normal, the Miami Dolphins. Called a timeout with 3 seconds left in regulation in hopes of icing the kicker in order to have the kicker become more nervous so that he would miss the clutch kick in hopes that. Teams commonly utilized this tactic in order to distract the concentration of the kicker. If Smith was successful, the game would have ended with a New England victory by, wait for it, an Old England kicker, which would have been ironic because John Smith was from Old England. Yes, the kicker John Smith was a native of Leafield, England, approximately a half an hour drive from Oxford. However, the kicker from Old England missed the kick for New England. Miami went on to win the game in overtime. John Smith was a teenager in England when the Beatles came on the music scene, and he adored them as he was growing up during his formative years in the UK. The irony of England's John Smith missing that kick just moments after Lennon was pronounced dead was iconic, almost as if some really bad synergy had gone through an English channel. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. During the game, New England coaches and players tried to keep the bad news from Smith, but the crowd was abuzz, and eventually Smith discovered the horrible news. Well, thank you, Jeffrey. That was kickety-boo, as Scotty in San Diego likes to say. As we all know, it was 39 years previously to the day, the 8th of December, 1941, that FDR declared war on Japan, a titanic moment in history. The goddess of an irony was just working overtime as well, as thousands of New Yorkers gathered at the Dakota and sang Lennon's iconic songs, Give Peace a Chance and Imagine. Yes, yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey says, oh, no. If you don't go to headon.live and contribute tonight, Bob will play Yoko Ono's music for the rest of the evening. And speaking of World War II, last night West Virginia lost one of its all-time great men when Chuck Yeager passed away at 97, and I don't know why I'm still using this accent. Among Yeager's numerous accomplishments were a Purple Heart, Bronze Star, Medal of Honor, and the list is endless. Also exceeded the sound barrier while in flight and was flying ace in World War II when in one swoop he downed 5 German fighter planes. He Jaeger actually was a quintuple ace. He took out 15 German planes in the course of his World War II service. It is said that he had 20/10 vision. Yeah. A few thoughts from Jeffrey. Well, he broke the speed of sound in an aircraft. Talk about a fast high. General Chuck Yeager was the real Jaegermeister. He was the man. Which is kind of interesting because in German, Jaeger, which is what Chuck Yeager, right. Jaeger means hunter. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey replies, I'll drink to that. Jeffrey, you will damn near drink to anything because you're just a, well, you used to be a luscious giraffe. Now you're just a giraffe lush. So let's raise our glasses to General Brigadier General Chuck Yeager, and here's a $25 Jaegermeister challenge. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 8th day of December 2020, with Giraffery kicking it with Kiss, Kiss, Kiss by Yoko Ono. My personal favorite take on that is the Powerpuff Girls Yoko episode, but we'll leave that be. Someday Monkey No Play Piano Song. Play Piano Song. Right? No, Steve. John Lennon? Vlad's Boy? No, I see you're not up on the... Right. Got it. No, not Vlad's Boy. Groucho's Boy. No, that's Marx, not Lennon. Sorry. Oh, God, how does this happen? How does this start? Yeah. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy, with a birthday celebration contribution, meaning we go down to 700 bucks. Thank you. And meanwhile, a note from Charlene in Rogues Island. Here's 140 bucks to finish last week. Best from, you know, Rogues Island, where the rogues are COVID first in the nation. These grim milestones, these grim firsts. Thank you, Charlene, founding member of the sorority of Leans. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. So that actually takes us down to 560. 560. And that's huge. And Ralph's has taken us down to 550. And so we are we're making progress. 250 finishes off yesterday, so hallelujah to that. That's absolutely true. Point of order, says James in Illinois. FDR declared war. He did not. He did not declare war. So maybe that's because Giraffery was in his having one of his English moments this evening that he forgot his constitution. Only the Congress can declare war. The president may ask for a declaration, but the president has no power to declare war. This civics moment brought to you by James in Illinois. Oh, and David in South Carolina, Stan, sends along some photos. A visit to the Dakota. And the strawberry fields. A mosaic there now. Circular in nature, kind of a, what's that word, mandala? And in the center, the one word, imagine. And a yellow chrysanthemum. Nice photos, David, thank you. That's David and Candace, I think. I suspect they took that trip while Candace was a student at Princeton, perhaps. Yeah, thank you. And so, by the way, speaking of COVID, Jesus. Rudy Giuliani. Yes, yes. Also, another passing to note. Irish Dave reminding me of that. Maryland politician who passed away 2 days ago, Paul Spiros Sarbanes, Democrat from Maryland, House of Representatives 1971 to 1977, and for 30 years a member of the United States Senate. And he passed just 2 days ago at the age of 87. Thanks for the reminder, Irish Dave. No, Rudy Giuliani, who, by the way, it turns out, well, we're finding out more and more about the woman who served as a witness and, of course, found her way into being mimicked on Saturday Night Live this past. We're talking about Melissa Carone, 33 years old, who it turns out, besides showing up at that hearing and sitting maskless next to Rudy, who was sort of brewing up some fresh, hot COVID even as he sat there in the hearing room in Lansing, Melissa Carone was right next to him, and we all heard it. We ran the audio here. Well, turns out that Melissa Carone, where do they find them? There's something about these maggots. They can always find people with interesting pasts. Back in September 2019, Melissa Carone was given 12 months probation. It was closed out in September 2020. She had pled guilty to a lesser charge of disorderly conduct after engaging in sending sexy time videos to the ex-wife of her husband, because she explained, Melissa Carone did, that she wanted to send the ex-wife over the top. The investigating officer noting, Melissa stated that she knew it was wrong, and after she sent the videos, she told her fiancé to get a new router and get a new Wi-Fi company. Huh. Right. Interviewed by the Detroit News, she told them,
to quote Rudy Giuliani, instead of investigating an incredible witness, why don't you go investigate Hunter Biden smoking crack?
And she said she pled out not because she was guilty of the charge, but because she's a mother and she had a full-time job at the time and she couldn't keep going to court. But it was her husband who sent the sexy time videos. Sure, Missy. Sure. But anyway, whereas Nitwit Nero is referring to, people in the Republican-controlled offices in Georgia as rhinos and not a real Trump supporter. Well, say whatever you want about Rudy Giuliani, and we've said a lot, and there's more yet to say. By God, sitting in the hospital, he placed a phone call to 77 WABC Radio, New York, to talk about his experience with the Rona. And even though he's got the Rona, to complain about COVID regulations.
I mean, it's wonderful news that you're feeling well.
Well, I have to say, the minute I took the cocktail yesterday, I felt 100% better. It works very quickly. Wow.
Lydia and I were talking yesterday, and I was saying, I wondered if you coming out of this, and we assume that you would come out of this great, would the experience affect you the way it affected your debate prep colleague, Governor Chris Christie? Now, obviously, you both have different health situations, but he clearly came out of his experience, which was a pretty traumatic experience, it sounds like, feeling like he had a whole different view of COVID itself and fighting COVID and dealing with COVID. Are you
exactly the same view? You know, I've also been through cancer, a couple of other things, very serious, very...
4 or 5 divorces, couple of marriages to cousins, you know, a little, you know, incest is best, you know, put your cousin to the test. No, never mind, I shouldn't have said that. Shame on me. That was a gnur. I apologize.
Serious emergency knee operation. Things happen in life, and you have to go with them. You can't overreact to them. Otherwise, you let the fear of illness drive your entire life. So I've never overreacted to it. You take normal precautions. You don't screw around your whole life because of an illness. We face risk. I'd rather face risk than live in a basement all my life.
And right now, for anyone who's tuning in, you are listening to America's Mayor Rudy Giuliani calling in to his own show right here at WABC Radio. I am Lydia Serrani, joined by Juliet Huddy with the first exclusive interview with Mayor Giuliani calling from the hospital.
And wow.
Does it change your perspective, Mayor, on wearing a mask? We've been hearing about President-elect. I know we don't want like to.
Get the hockey puck. We've been hearing about President-elect. I know we don't like to call him that because you want to keep your job, right? They're at 77 WABC.
Does it change your perspective, Mayor, on wearing a mask? We've been hearing about President-elect. I know we don't like to call him that, but we hear about Joe Biden.
Well,
okay?
Some of us
okay.
don't.
We hear about Joe Biden talking about this 100-day mask mandate. How do you feel now about masks?
It does not, I think.
Wait a minute. This is 77 WABC, New York. And at least one of these women is a maggot and doesn't like to mention Joe Biden being president. Have they seen Biden's numbers for New York City and the greater 77 WABC broadcast market? Have they? Really?
I think you can overdo the mask. You can overdo almost anything.
I want to know how do you overdo the mask? I mean, this has real, we're going to have to sort this one out for a while, I think. How do you overdo a mask? I mean, is this like where, you know, preppy asshole who's wearing 8 popped collar Lacoste polos at one time? Yeah, you can overdo the popped collars and the polos. There's no doubt about it. But how do you overdo the mask? When is it a bad idea to wear a mask? I'm just having a hard time sorting this out. If the nearest person is 15 feet away, I don't think Paul from Parts Unknown would say that one was overdoing a mask if one was wearing a mask and the other person with a mask was 15 feet away. How about 20? No. How about 30? That's an interesting wager, Dave number 11. Dave number 11 says, I'll bet Sinclair owns 77 WABC. Possibly. At one point in time, the ABC flagships in New York and L.A. were part of one of the best and earliest talk radio networks. They had people like Michael Jackson, and I don't mean the King of Pop. I mean a very erudite sounding fellow. And it was quite good to listen to. We ran him back when I was program directoring a station before I took off for CNN. Once upon a time, says Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx, WABC was damn good music station. Now it's garbage conservative talk radio with Rush Limbaugh. Ick. 77 WABC. Ugh. Time for Rushy. I wonder who they're going to put in the slot when that really slow-moving lung cancer finally catches up with Flesh Flimball. I don't know. It's a puzzlement. Darlene in Connecticut. Wait! Back the truck up! That motherfucker got the cocktail, presumably the same one Trump got? Yes, Darlene. How did he rise to that level of importance? How did he pull that one off? Oh, wait, he's Trump's pettifogger. I see now. Even though Trump is the lamest lame duck there ever was, I guess Jenna Ellis is getting in line for that elite cocktail, too. Oh, yeah, very likely. And this is that Two Americas thing. Because he got, you know, Rudy got the cocktail yesterday. Just bang, he's in the door, and here, Rudy, here's your cocktail. Okay, I'll have a Manhattan. No, wrong cocktail, Rudy!
Everything done in moderation makes much more sense. And what we're doing to American business right now is disgraceful.
So, how do you do masks in moderation? Do you only put the loop on one ear? Do you wear it under your nose? Do you wear it as a chin strap? Is that masking in moderation? Remember, last night we had the clip of him in Michigan asking the woman to take off her mask because you know, theoretically it was making him look bad and by extension making COVID Caligula look bad that one of the witnesses, was wearing a mask. But yeah, Rudy gets the cocktail because Rudy's special and Rudy can afford it. And it must be a real humdinger. Apparently they didn't try to get him to gargle with bleach or put an ultraviolet dildo up him or anything. No. And I'm sure he wouldn't have complained if they'd offered him a little bit of finely warehoused Putinka brand vodka, or maybe even Trump vodka. Nah, even Rudy has standards. He wouldn't try to drink that rot gut.
And it's not based on science. This is a curable disease at this point.
Well, now, how about that? This is a curable disease at this point. Well, it's curable if you've got Jed Clampett walking around money-level wealth. Ordinary workaday, walk-a-day Americans are not getting the cocktail. Because there's not enough to go around. But, you know, somehow this pettifogger rates it.
This is in the category now of a curable disease. The mortality rates are nothing like they were 5-6 months ago.
Yeah, no, Rudy, you goddamned ignoramus. It was just last Thursday that we had the highest death toll of the entire pandemic. That's not 5 or 6 months ago. That's last Thursday. God, evil and stupid are no way to go through life, but somehow or another, Rudy Giuliani's managed it. Steve in New York says, I'm glad to see Rudy's going to get the same cocktail everyone's going to get. Only they're not. I think we'd have a lot less dead people if that cocktail had been more widely available. It's curable at this point, he says. Oh, the goddess of irony's got to be watching that thinking, I got to find something special for Rudy.
And they're reacting as if it's the same mortality rates as 5 or 6 months ago. And they are destroying American small business in 5 or 6 or 7 major cities. And I've been watching that on television. That's probably been getting me angrier than anything else. Watching those people on Staten Island having their business destroyed, or that woman in California where they put her out of business and they let NBC have a beautiful little cafe right across the street.
Yeah,
they enforce these mask rules, and the rules are so ridiculous they can't live by them.
And the mental health, you know, the mental health, too, of Americans being locked down, as well as the children going into school as well.
Oh, she's working hard to keep her job, isn't she? Curable, says James in Illinois. There's no cure. Treatable? Did Rudy get the chopper? I doubt it. No, but he got the monoclonal antibody cocktail, and probably from the sound and the forced pressure of his speech, he probably also got the dexamethasone. And as quick as he can, somehow or another, he'll wind up. He'll probably wind up getting the vaccine before, like, frontline healthcare workers do. There is no depth to the perfidy of these walking monstrosities.
First happened, and we were at something like a 5 or 6% mortality rate, and we didn't know if it was going to get even higher, and there was a lot of unknowns. I had some trepidations about the complete lockdown, but I thought it was the right thing to do. But I also thought we
except for the fact that it wasn't a complete lockdown. It had more holes in it than a really, really old Swiss cheese. Because it was a lockdown for some, but not for others. No, Billable Rick, I will not play some Yoko Ono songs. Billable Rick adds, cowbell for Joey's Journal today. I know I'm 8 minutes behind the program. I will haunt your past. Okay, how about a compromise? There's a cowbell for 8 minutes behind. I will haunt your past. Compromise? Compromise accomplished. He really, and just like the rest of the maggots, and by the way, Rudy was swanning around a holiday party, and then Jenna Ellis, remember we had the clip from her that Sparky sent us yesterday? Jenna Ellis was on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, Fox Business, I don't know what, talking about how she didn't care what anybody called her because she was a devoted servant of Jeebus, and she knowed that Jeebus loved her. Jeebus would kick her in the teeth if he came back, or right, you know, Satan, get thee hence, and all of that, right. But she's got it, and she went swanning all over the White House with it, and somehow or another, strikes me as not what Jesus would do. But there we are.
We should have announced to the American people there's a trade-off for it. We're not getting this lockdown for free. This is going to cause a certain number of deaths. It's going to destroy a certain number of lives. It's not just, you just don't lock down.
Well, we also, since then, we've become a lot more familiar with the virus itself, how it spreads, you know, what is more dangerous? What is it going on to a subway, or is it going into a restaurant or a bar and hanging out with each other? I mean, we're starting to get a lot more information, and we're curating that information and applying that. My biggest concern, though, Rudy, is the cocktail that you've been given is from...
Yeah, the cocktail. What about the cocktail?
What I understand, and you can correct me...
Cocktails? There's cocktails? I'll have a gin Ricky.
Me if I'm wrong. It's not something that the normal American is going to be able to get because it's quite expensive. Is that a concern for you?
I didn't know that. I mean, they give it here at this hospital.
Yeah, they give it. They give it because, you know, that's the... He's at the Washington, D.C. Free Hospital, where everything is free for people named Rudy.
I didn't know that. Are the other cocktails free, too? I'll have a vodka Gibson.
It's at
certain hospitals can get it. I know there's a Northern Westchester Hospital, Westchester County Hospital. There are a couple of hospitals.
They went over with me the 5 methods of treatment that they have, and that's one of the methods of treatment that they have.
What, he got to pick? It was like a Chinese restaurant menu, 1 from column A, 3 from column B? It did.
I'll have a margarita and some muhu gaipan and the other cocktail.
So, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
Jenna Ellis, your partner there, has since announced that she has COVID, and the concern is that she was at the White House or one of the White House Christmas parties. There are several news outlets that are reporting that their sources inside.
Goodness. She tested negative. She tested negative, I think, the next day. It could be a freak that she had it, but.
She's a freak and she had it. And, well, we've got our host there back at the back in the booth at 77 WABC. Traffic on the 20s, news on the tops. And Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Savage. I don't know. She's trying to keep her job now. But she's on the horns of a dilemma as to whether or not she can actually tell Rudy that he should probably go and lie down for a while, or can he have her canned?
Can't imagine she had it at that time.
The bottom line is that she had it, and just at this point...
No. She didn't necessarily have it at the party.
She did test positive.
No, eventually.
Right.
Oh, okay. Eventually. Okay.
Exactly. And you don't know how long
it's... See, it's like Nitwit Nero said. If you don't test for it, you don't have cases. So she only tested for it eventually. She wasn't swanning around that White House party hooting and grunting and honking and squealing about Jeebus and how she loved Trump at the top of her lungs and singing "A Mighty God Is Our Donald" and "Trump's We Have Heard on High" and little town of Mar-a-Lago. No. She wasn't spewing virus particles then. Of course not. She tested positive, but that was later.
It takes. I mean, yes, she might have had it. Maybe she didn't have it.
All you can go by is the test that you take.
That's true, but it doesn't often. It doesn't always show up immediately. It could take days.
If you are invited to a place and they test you. And they test you as negative.
And they use a testing protocol, a testing machine or whatever, that is 48% false negatives, which means that test is actually just a coin toss. Well, does somebody say martinis?
Go in. You don't know that you have it.
Mayor, obviously you were crisscrossing across the country, fighting for voting.
I was tested on Monday and Tuesday, and then I went to Michigan, I went to Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia.
And now Michigan and Arizona have both shut their legislatures down because, well, you're a modern Typhoid Mary, Rudy.
I had been tested on Monday night. I was in Michigan on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then Friday in Atlanta, and then I was back.
Right. Yeah, I know. You were tested multiple times, right?
And I didn't have symptoms until Sunday.
Until Sunday.
And so that means he was spreading the disease like wildfire Saturday, Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday. Yeah.
So the reports that you had symptoms on Friday night are not true?
I probably felt a little tired on Friday night, but I didn't realize it.
Well,
yeah, I mean, maybe kind of, but I mean, I don't want to get sued. Right. Rudy. Matt in San Francisco writes, my brother informed me 3 days ago his husband's mother passed away from COVID-19. She lived in Brazil. A few years back, my brother remodeled his home in Albuquerque, New Mexico, enlarged it for the specific reason of being able to host Maria, his husband's mother, and his sister, who would visit from Brazil on a regular basis. They are, of course, devastated. To hear this clueless POS ramble on and on, minimizing the severity of this virus, just makes me so angry I can't even put it into words. It is difficult to put that level of frustration into words. Matt. And so maybe we're better off with the words of Mike Sliper. You've never heard of Mike Sliper before. Matt, or Mike Sliper, is the son of Robert Sliper. You've also never heard of Robert Sliper. Robert Sliper and his son Mike are from South Dakota. Robert Sliper, at 84 years old, well, South Dakota Governor Christy Nome Mind, could do no wrong in 84-year-old Robert Sliper's eyes when she said that South Dakota was safe and that COVID-19 was no big deal. Robert Sliper believed her. And at 84, Robert Sliper contracted COVID-19. And even though he believed every word that came out of her mouth, and Robert Sliper believed her when she said that South Dakota had plenty of hospital beds, plenty of ICU space. Oh, the COVID wasn't even going to be a problem in South Dakota. He believed that too. And early in November, Robert Sliper, 84 years old, got COVID-19. But the hospitals in South Dakota were so overrun by the pandemic that there was no room for 84-year-old Robert Sliper at the hospital, and so they had to put him aboard a hospital plane, and fly him an hour away to Colorado. His family couldn't come with him. They sat back in South Dakota, waiting and worrying, grieving. And Mike Sliper began getting angrier and angrier. 3 days after he got to Colorado on November the 13th, Robert Sliper died alone. Well, not alone, but with no loved ones anywhere near him. In fact, two states away in South Dakota, Robert Sliper died of a disease that Christy Nome said South Dakota was more than prepared to deal with, but wasn't. There was no cocktail for Robert Sliper. There was no notion that the disease was curable, because it isn't. And as far as 84-year-old Robert Sliper was concerned, it wasn't treatable either. And so his grieving son, Mike, sat down to compose a letter to Christy Nome, who has spent as much time, probably more, pondering her presidential chances for 2024, more time doing that than she has dealing with COVID-19. And so Mike Sliper wrote what appears to have been an open letter to Christy Nome. And he said, "I'm sorry if this is wordy, confusing, or disjointed. I've been up all night waiting for a phone call from Colorado that finally came. I regret to inform you that you've lost yet another vote for president in 2024. Although Dad was a big fan of yours, he will not be able to purchase one of your T-shirts, nor be able to follow you on the Me Before We, or however you say it, app that you've been touting. And while I admire your tenacity in recruiting businesses and constituents to come to South Dakota, I think it's abhorrent that you're doing it on the backs of South Dakotans dying from COVID. Selling T-shirts, Christy? Really? Really, Mr. Slyper? Are you at all surprised? Because people who saw her bowing and kowtowing before Trump on July the 4th, we're not surprised. The Daily Beast reached out to Mr. Slyper, and he told them, "I have many friends all over the state that are healthcare workers, and I know how hard they are working and how much many of them are hurting. I believe in my heart they're doing their best, and I know they wish that they could have taken care of Dad. That Christy Noem took care of that. All that hateful, stupid, self-centered, ignorant, miserable maggot had to do was tell South Dakotans to wear a mask, to stay at home if they didn't need to be gone anywhere. If they had to be in a store, to practice social distancing. I'm sure Mike Slyper would have done anything he could to keep his daddy safe. But his daddy trusted Christy Noem all the way into the grave. And that, well, that is how tragedies are born. You really, really wish sometimes, at least I know I do, maybe you do, that things like ghosts and hauntings were real. Because it would be more than just if every time that Christy Noem tried to lay her little pumpkin head down to sleep, that the COVID dead of South Carolina's shades would shriek at her as she tried to close her eyes and sleep, so that she could go nowhere, that those ghosts would not torment her and ask her why she sent them to their graves. The same, of course, applies to COVID Caligula. And who knows what will befall him if what befell his father catches up with him. I've mentioned before the final years of my grandmother, who was actually an intellectual force, but in her final years was reduced to moaning in her sleep for Jesus to save her. Maybe the near 300,000 dead, maybe the 500,000 dead eventually, who will be dead because of the callous indifference to human suffering of Donald Trump, maybe they will catch up with him when his mind has abandoned him. Or maybe they'll just hit him with a Haldol cocktail just to get him to shut the fuck up. Because you know damned good and well that Precious Princess Iwankama Daddy Trump Kushner and Don Jr. and Eric the Dumber, and probably not even Little Boron, are gonna give a tinker's damn about him as he rants and raves into that long night. Did I say Christy Noem of South Carolina? If I did, I meant South Dakota. My bad. Christy Noem, South Dakota. Yeah, no cocktail for you, Mr. Slyper. I mean, who could blame Mr. Sliper for believing her? There she was on TV every day, flying off to here and there and everywhere, and not a mask in sight, going off to Trump rallies to try to get the maggot faithful on the Trump train once again, as they had been in 2016. I mean, there she was, all pretty. She wouldn't lie to somebody like Robert Sliper, would she? I mean, she's a Christian. She's a Republican. She's got family values practically oozing out of every pore. Yeah. Poor Mr. Sliper. She would. Because Mr. Sliper didn't have any more value to Kristi Noem of South Dakota than a lame mule would have had. Because she's a maggot. And that's how they are. Going back to the Giuliani broadcast, Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm sorry, who's this idiotic bubblehead interviewing Rudy? Rudy Caludi? This is gross. Why is she not calling him out on his stupidity? How much does she get paid for being such a journalistic hack? Well, probably gets paid enough that she can keep the lights on and go shopping at Bloomingdale's once in a while or whatever. However much she gets paid, she doesn't want to lose it. And the best way to lose your job is to call a star like Rudy the ignorant, pettifogging maniac that he is. And by the way, answer to the question, Dave number 11 says, I lose. New York billionaire John Katzimatidis owns WABC et al. He's a billionaire. He's also a talk show host. And he's the owner, president, chairman, and CEO of Gristiti's Foods. Flavio sent this along. A grocery chain in Manhattan, as well as the Red Apple Group that develops real estate and handles aviation issues in New York, Florida, and Pennsylvania. Back in 2013, he was the first runner-up for the Republican nomination for mayor of New York City. Yeah, I know. Thank you. Thank you, Flavio. Red Apple Media acquired WABC March 2nd of this year. Red Apple, get it? Red. Asymptomatic spread, David in South Carolina, Stan says, they're still confusing the facts about asymptomatic spread. One does not have to have symptoms in order to spread COVID. They are confusing the issue. And, David, I would go so far as to say that it's not because they're stupid, although, you know, they probably are. But it's also deliberate. Because the people who follow a psychopath get caught up in his own psychopathology. Riddle me this, Horn family, writes Megan. I just got off the phone with my mom. She told me of a second phone conversation with my father, a Trump supporter. He regaled her with yet another tale of how he's dead convinced that Biden will resign office within 6 months, letting Kamala Harris take the reins so she can run and become president in 2024 and 2028. At this point, my mother interrupted him and told him that he sounds like someone who has a problem with women in power, and that's the reason they got divorced. Ow. That'll leave a mark. So riddle me this, Horn family. How do Republican men not understand that when they obsess over the likes of Hillary Clinton or AOC or Nancy Pelosi or Ilhan Omar or Kamala Harris, that they indeed don't sound anything like like anything other than a guy who's scared to death of women, particularly women of color, in power in the government? Better yet, what is the reason behind all this? Do they think that by constantly obsessing over them, they make themselves look better by comparison? Genuinely curious, signed Megan. Dear Genuinely Curious. Some of that, yeah, all of that, some. But it's also the deep-seated fear of being proven unnecessary. Young men have their lives before them, and they have that sort of prototypical grunting and scratching themselves value that young men always bring to a civilization. If you need to go and get in a scrape with somebody, there's lots of young testosterone-fueled men who will happily go off and have the living shit slaughtered out of them just to prove that they could. In ancient archaeology, in some cases maybe hunter-gatherer even, sedentary agricultural civilization, you will find representations in the archaeological record of various female figurines, statuettes. And a professor of mine at WVU, lo, these many years ago, taught that those, because she had done a data-driven analysis of the ones that were known of in the record, and she said that they those statuettes fell into three basic categories. There was the young woman, the young female. There was the fertile mother female. And there was the postmenopausal, and this is not a pejorative, this is the term that she used, crone, C-R-O-N-E. And that those three stages of life delineated the life force of the feminine in those societies. Curiously enough, you don't find the same sorts of things representing males. And I think some of that plays into what human beings understand on an almost subcellular level. For instance, if you read, and it's a novel, but it's based on her synthesis of the mythologies. There's a novel by Mary Renault called The King Must Die. And it's a narrative form, and it's beautifully told of the Theseus myth, who, having been informed by his mother that he is the son of Poseidon, Earthshaker, whose land-based votive animal was the bull, and the horse. Well, he takes off from the little village where he's been raised as a prince, and he heads to Athens, where he has tokens of his biological father, even though Poseidon is also his father. And along the way, he runs across a culture, for lack of a better term, where every year they select a new king, and every spring the women kill the new king for fertility purposes. This, I think, ties into the old Fisher King myth as well. And we have that out of Northern Europe as well, a similar story. And this fear of irrelevance is what drives cranky old conservative white men, such as you're describing, Megan, into paroxysms of impotent fury at women exercising power. Because way, way, way back in the dim mists of time, power had to be wrested away from women. And women had to be brutally subjected, subjugated, oppressed. And that's basically the origins of most of the Sky Father religions. Great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Because most of the feminine religions were earth-based and fertility-based. Wow, am I deep in the weeds, and I apologize for that. But you asked the question, and I think that's the big part of the answer, Megan. Plain old gut-bending, bowel-watering fear. Yeah. That's all. That's all. Yesterday evening, I had the story of the longtime legislator in Alabama who, from his deathbed, begged people in Alabama to take COVID seriously. He said, I think we messed up here. And then died. Well, in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand yesterday, they had a ceremony to honor the memories of 2,000 Kentuckians who have died from coronavirus there. And KCCI reported on one man who told the story of his brother who had died of COVID-19 back this past August. Speaking of his brother, Robert Patrick Perry Jr., Chris Perry said, his 80-year-old mother loved to call him Robbie, and that was always her name for him. And now she does not have her Robbie anymore to come see her. Robert Patrick Perry Jr., Robbie, was 56 when COVID-19 claimed him. But of course, there's a tragic flaw in this, hubris, because Chris Perry explained that Robbie didn't think it necessary to wear a mask. His family, the people who loved him most on planet Earth, begged him to wear a mask. But he would not do it. And finally, like the Alabama senator we talked about yesterday evening, when he came to his end, he said, if the Lord allows me to get through this, I'll never leave home without wearing a mask again. It's not some made-up virus. It's not some political ploy. It is real. And then Robert Patrick Perry Jr., Robbie, did die. And at the time he was contracting the virus, his mother, his 80-year-old mama, at the insistence of the rest of her family, had quarantined for a week. And that's how his 80-year-old mother is alive to grieve for her dead 56-year-old son, Robbie. A hell of a thing. They're from Carter County. The Perrys are. Pass through there. You pass through there when you leave West Virginia westbound on I-64. I think. I don't know. Maybe it's on I-65. This will resonate with Steve in New York. Robbie, he said, was the Cincinnati Reds' biggest fan and could tell you any Reds statistic at the drop of a hat. And he spent his life trying to help others. But like a Greek tragedy of old, he had a fatal flaw, because he didn't think COVID-19 would get to Carter County. Jesus. And so Chris Perry, as the memorial wreath was laid in memory of 2,000 dead Kentuckians, that he said he hopes and prays that people will take the virus seriously. They lit up the state capitol in green lights to honor their bluegrass state dead. Whew. Dave says, I'm not sure, Bob. I have a PhD in uselessness, and I don't fear leadership by women. Your mileage may vary. Well, some of that also has to do with your lizard brain, Dave. Anybody who posts a picture on Facebook of a clamp on a canned ham with the admonition, if you're happy and you know it, ... Well, Dave, that's anything but useless. Don't sell yourself short, my friend. Steve in New York says, death rates, etc. I just did some quick and dirty analysis. The death rate has indeed come down and is around 1.9%. However, the infection rate, defined as daily positive tests divided by the number of tests in a given day, is skyrocketing. In other words, even if the death rate is 1.9 to 2% of the exponential increases in cases will make deaths go up exponentially. In addition, as hospitals become overwhelmed, we're going to see the death rate increase. Couple this with the exponential increase in cases, this will lead to an even steeper incline of deaths. And in this case, the incline of death is not a ride at a theme park. It's a daily horror in this country where a viral pandemic sweeps through alongside an intellectual pandemic of abject moronity, stupidity, and most importantly, perhaps, willful ignorance. The kind of ignorance that doesn't get a cure. That's the kind of ignorance where one insists on being ignorant. And yet they continue to bark and howl and grunt and groan and hoot, bray about restrictions associated with COVID-19. It was over at CNBC where Andrew Ross Sorkin and Rick Santelli were talking about coronavirus restrictions. You might recall Rick Santelli is the man who largely gave birth to the teabagger movement back in 2009, 2010, with a tantrum that he threw on CNBC's air. We see what that got us. A hockey puck warning. Ecce stupido. Because it is.
The easiest answer is necessarily the only answer.
Rick, I just as a public health and public service announcement for the audience, the difference between
Who is this?
Hold on. The difference between The difference between a big box retailer and a restaurant, or frankly, even a church, are so different it's unbelievable.
I disagree. You can have your thoughts and I can have mine.
You're required to wear a mask.
I disagree.
It's science. I'm sorry. It's science. If
it's
you're wearing
not
a mask,
science.
It's a different story.
500 people in a Lowe's aren't any safer than 150 people in a restaurant that holds 600. I don't believe it. Sorry. Don't believe
okay.
it. And I live in an area where there's a lot of restaurants that have fought back and they don't have any problems. And they're open.
Okay. You don't have to believe it.
Yeah, but believing's got nothing to do with it. The coronavirus doesn't give a rat's ass what Rick Santelli fucking believes. Believing is for Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and the resurrected Christ and the Easter Bunny. Yeah. It's not for anything science related. And yet somehow or another, because multimillionaire for-profit media, Rick Santelli can sit there and screech and hoot, and a portion of the people watching CNBC are agreeing with him and will go out and die. Go out and get killed and spread the disease and kill others. You know, just like Mr. Perry in Kentucky. Or the man, the 84-year-old Christy Gnome fan in South Dakota.
But let me just say this. You're doing a disservice to the viewer because the viewers need to understand it.
You are doing a disservice to the viewer. You are.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If I would like to keep our viewers as healthy as humanly possible. The idea of packing people into restaurants.
I think our viewers are smart enough to make part of those decisions on their own.
Completely different
things. I don't think that I'm much smarter than all the viewers like some people do.
Yeah, because that's what it is. That other guy, he's one of them eggheads who thinks he's smarter than all the viewers are. Well, Rick Santelli, by God, knows he's not smarter than the viewers. It's one of the few things he doesn't believe. He knows. He knows he's not smarter. Yeah, but that Andrew Ross Sorkin, he thinks he knows things. He's science-y things. As Scott in San Diego points out, you can't spell believe, B-E-L-I-E-V-E, without a lie, L-I-E, right in the middle of it. Holy cow! That may be one of the most profound things, and Scott has offered some profundities that I have lately heard. And yes, the Earth goddess, Tellus Mater, Mother Earth. Thank you, cultural correspondent. Flavio in Wisconsin. What a country. You know, Yakov Smirnoff. If that really was his name. Oh, and the Trump International Hotel, or whatever the name of that trashy hotel is in Manhattan. It's having some problems. Because at the same time that Nitwit Nero has been downplaying the coronavirus and getting hundreds of thousands of Americans killed, it turns out that the genius businessman has been tanking his own hotel, too. He'll be wanting it. Now why he's suddenly behind the idea of a new stimulus becomes clear. He wants it. Frankly, he wants it all. So at an investor call for Trump Hotel investors and executives, well, it wasn't the prettiest forecast. General Manager Matthew, ironically named Vander Grift, said, well, while we were seeing encouraging signs of growth and recovery, no, this is not Jeffrey, this is Matthew Vander Grift, while we were seeing encouraging signs of growth and recovery, that momentum tempered down towards the end of October with rising COVID cases nationwide. The momentum we were experiencing has slowed as of late November.
Hey, didn't anybody tell him that the boss said that if you don't test, you don't got so many cases?
Yeah. Well, with not so many people, as many as we had, but with not so many people traveling for the holidays, that means not so many people in trashy Trump hotel rooms. And without the holiday traffic this time of year, shit gets real grim real fast in a trashy Trump hotel. I mean, Chef Jean-Georges Vongerichten, he's got a restaurant on the first floor of the trashy Trump Hotel in New York. He's had to lay off 216 members of his staff. And there may be another restaurant shutdown coming. There probably is. Chef Jean-Georges Vongerichten told the New York Post he doesn't have any idea what's coming at him. Of course, I'm a little short on sympathy for Chef Jean-Georges Vongerichten because he agreed to do business with the Trumps. You might recall, and what is his name? Brilliant Spanish chef. Had a deal to put a restaurant in the trashy Trump Hotel in the old post office building in Washington, D.C. He was a dear friend of Bourdain's. And the minute that Trump came down that escalator talking about Mexican rapists, he said, nope, I'm out of here, and was even willing to engage in being sued by Trump. He said, fuck it. My business is dead on arrival thanks to your remarks. Didn't care. And it has not hurt him. In fact, he has become a world... Jose Andres, thank you, Ralphs, serving as the ad hoc horn research department this evening. Jose Andres, his morals, his ethical center would not permit him to do business with an open racist, bigot, xenophobe, and son of a Klansman. So he bailed. And along the way, found himself a sort of second career as a humanitarian, figuring out the logistics of how to feed starving people in the wake of a hurricane when Donald Trump let Puerto Rico flap in the hurricane winds. Of course, then there's the question of how many maggots actually can pronounce Jean-Georges Vongerichten, let alone read his fucking menu. I mean, really, how many Emery's and Marvelines are going to the trashy Trump Hotel in New York City? You couldn't give me a month at that goddamn shithole. Even if you gave me one of the good NASA space suits. I'm not talking about the corporate ones they have now. No, you just couldn't. So it's just hard to believe that there's I don't know, maybe they are. Emery and Marvelline, you know, sitting there in their matching Barca loungers watching Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. And Marvelline says, oh, Emery, remember when we were young?
And we'd go places, and we'd stay at the Holiday Inn sometimes when we were flush. Oh, Emory, I wish we could go and stay at the Trashy Trump Hotel in Manhattan and go have a fancy dinner at that Von Goulash's restaurant. I bet he's got good goulash, don't you, Emory? Quiet, Marveline. That Sebastian Gorka is about to come on, and you know we always like to hear what Seb has to say. So here's the funny part. If you're an investor in the Trump Organization and you were on that call, you got the bad news. You ain't going to get no profits this year, chumps. And then you got the worst news. When the executive said, besides the money we unit owners have been losing in 2020, yes, you're certainly going to have to wire more money for 2021. That according to the building board chair, Douglas Russell. Pardon me for just a moment. Suckers! What a maroon. Yeah. But, you know, you live by the bed bug, you die by the bed bug. Right? Right. Yeah, Randy Radar points out, my friend has had some problems with man-hating from some lesbians. Now he thinks that any strong woman is a lesbian. It's not just your friend. That's an old, old, old problem. Yeah, hey, baby, let me buy you a drink. I don't want a drink from you. Get the fuck away from me. Yeah, obviously a lesbian. Right. So here we are at the halfway point of this Titanic Tuesday, this Trump-tanic Tuesday. And being a Tuesday, let's take a break because we have Brad and Desi in the Green News Report. I do like to, I sometimes forget to or get too wrapped up to get to it, but generally speaking, I like to run the Green News because, well, Brad and Desi do such a damn good job of keeping up with that particular niche of world events. So with the fundraising goal at $550, let's see what they've got to say and maybe take it down a little bit. Okay, let's see, 550, so we're done. We're done with Friday. We're started on yesterday. And we got $250 to go to finish funding for yesterday. Then maybe we can start on this, but we got to do yesterday first. Okay? Okay.
It's Tuesday, December 8, 2020.
All policymakers who prioritize mitigating climate risks should see these records as warning bells.
November 2020 was the hottest November ever recorded globally. Trump EPA rejects tougher standards on deadly soot despite link to COVID deaths. Denmark sets a deadline for ending fossil fuel extraction. Plus,
we have this chemical soup that washes into these creeks in the fall when it rains.
Scientists discover pollution from car tires is killing salmon.
All of those skid marks and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
But I'll admit, after the way 2020 has gone, I myself have wondered if the world is even worth saving.
I'm with you, sister. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, 2020 has broken a lot of records when it comes to, well, certainly to storms, but also to heat this year.
Oh, yes, indeed. November 2020 was the hottest November ever recorded globally since record keeping began in the 1880s. That's according to the European Union's climate monitoring service, Copernicus.
What do they know?
NASA and NOAA are expected to reach similar conclusions in coming weeks.
Copycats.
The new November 2020 record breaks the previous November record set in 2016. 2020 is now on track to be one of the top two hottest years ever recorded, and that is despite a cooling La Nina weather pattern in the Pacific Ocean. And that, climate scientists say, indicates that the relentless pace of man-made global warming is overwhelming the possible effects of cooler ocean temperatures.
I am starting to notice a pattern here. We should keep studying this for another 20 or 30 years. Maybe we'll figure it out.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration is racing the red light to ensure pollution is as bad as possible before they're forced out of office.
As deadly as possible.
On Monday, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency rejected setting tougher standards on deadly soot. That's microscopic particles of air pollution. And that was despite scientific evidence showing that soot contributes to the premature deaths of nearly 50,000 Americans every year.
Scientific evidence from the administration's own scientists.
Health experts say the failure to curb soot pollution is especially deadly right now because growing scientific evidence shows that long-term exposure to air pollution, which already disproportionately affects communities of color and low-income communities, is linked to higher death rates from COVID-19.
Oh, well, if it's killing people with COVID-19, obviously they don't care about those people.
The Biden administration can restore many clean air and public health standards that the Trump administration has rolled back, but that process will take time, and meanwhile, more Americans may die prematurely from air pollution. However, Georgia voters have the power to save lives in the U.S. Senate runoff elections on January 5th, because if Democrats win majorities in both houses of Congress, then they can repeal these last-minute rules.
And not a moment too soon.
But there is a source of pollution that's going to be a lot harder to reduce. A new study has found that car tires are the culprit behind the mysterious deaths of coho salmon in creeks around Puget Sound in Washington State. Huh. It took scientists 20 years to find the culprit, a chemical soup from roadways that washes into creeks when it rains, contains bits of worn car tires that chemically react to contaminate the water and in turn kill the coho.
Wow.
University of Washington scientist Ed Colajay explains.
The chemical that seems to be really problematic and toxic to these fish is actually a preservative for tires. I hope we can get to a point where we have tires that are safe for not just humans driving on them, but also the fish and the organisms that are exposed to roadway runoff.
Meanwhile, as you gear up for the holidays, new studies have shown that glitter is a source of pollution. The tiny pieces can wash into the environment, harming wildlife. Three major retailers in the UK have announced they are eliminating glitter from their branded Christmas merchandise this year because it sticks around a long time after the sparkle has gone and is mistaken as food by fish and birds.
Glitter.
Glitter.
Really?
Really.
Is there nothing you cannot ruin, Desi Doyen?
Finally, some major good news. In a landmark decision, Denmark has become the first major oil producer to set a deadline to end extraction of fossil fuels in its territory. Denmark is the top oil producer in the European Union. They announced they will stop issuing licenses for new oil and gas drilling in the North Sea and will set existing production to expire no later than 2050. Environmental groups noted that 2050 is way too late to end production of oil and gas to curb man-made global warming, but they called the decision a watershed moment and a major shift for a country to keep its fossil fuels in the ground.
Yeah, let's celebrate. Break out the glitter. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All that glitters isn't gold. All that glitters isn't gold.
Oh, Desi can pull out a Jim Dandy bumper once in a while. Well, more than once in a while. Glitter. Really? I get. Well, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah, I guess it does. So, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa also knew Chef Jose Andres. I don't know why I didn't. Strange that. But, and I apologize for how grim some of this has been this evening. But grim has been our order of the day for rather a long while now. It dawned on me today, a day late, that it was a year ago yesterday that I showed up down in northwest Alabama for 6 weeks to do the Lion in Winter. And by the time I was coming back, the day that I returned here, as I came up the road, the news broke of the crash of Kobe Bryant's helicopter. And it was kind of just all downhill from there, wasn't it? I remember broadcasting during the month of February, which, of course, you know, this year was a 29-day month. And even though it was the shortest, and it always is the shortest month of the year, it seems like the longest one, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. As one gets more and more antsy for the arrival of spring and the retilting of the Northern Hemisphere toward the sun. Well, maybe we can scrounge up a little bit of optimism about the new year that will begin 48 days from today on January 20th. It's a Wednesday, you know. We're going to have a prayer meeting inauguration Wednesday. I would imagine that will probably be a front porch conversation. We'll have to have everybody around to talk about the great and glorious day of watching COVID Caligula head to points elsewhere. But how about this for a contrast? If pressed, I really could not tell you much more about the discography of Taylor Swift than say that there's this one song where she sings, "Say You'll Remember Me Wearing a Nice Dress," or something like that. And I know that one because it's a ringtone that I hear rather a lot. I couldn't tell you, but I have to give credit where credit's due. She spent a lot of time early on trying to play everything close to her vest and not court controversy, but it seems like at some point in time she just got a bad case of the fuckets. And Entertainment Weekly recently named her one of the entertainers of the year. She's said to put on a really good show. And when she sat down for an interview with Entertainment Weekly, they asked her about crowded bars in her hometown there in Nash Vegas. And Taylor Swift was unequivocal in saying that there are people who don't seem to have their eyes open right now. I mean, you just immediately think of the health workers who are putting their lives on the line and oftentimes losing their lives. If they make it out of this, if they see the other side of it, there's going to be a lot of trauma that comes with that. There's going to be things that they witness that they will never be able to unsee. Hey, hi, Taylor Swift. Oddly enough, I was talking about that a couple of weeks ago, and then lo and behold, because we're out in front of the curve, other people start talking about it too. Again, just as we don't have enough doctors or nurses or nurse practitioners or certified nursing assistants or anybody else involved with healthcare to handle a pandemic, just as is the case there, We also don't have, we didn't have enough mental health professionals to deal with the goddamn opioid epidemic, let alone a pandemic that's going to traumatize or has already traumatized the entire healthcare community. Taylor Swift is right, though. And we aren't thinking enough about that. And anybody who doesn't wear a mask, you know, we've talked about this for 9 months. What does it mean when you refuse to wear a mask? Well, maybe you're ignorant. Early on, maybe there was a split of opinion, to mask or not to mask. That's no longer the case. And HIPAA and I got a secret condition and all that is nothing but petulant childishness. When the Rona was first burning through places like Massachusetts and Washington and New York, well, it was possible for nurses and other healthcare professionals to go from places that didn't have much COVID to try to pick up the slack in the hard-hit areas. That's over now, because the whole country is a hard-hit area. And so every healthcare system in the United States is overtaxed and overburdened. And so now, whenever you see somebody not wearing a mask, what you see there is a human being who does not give a tinker's damn about the very people who may be caring for the people that they love. I had a telemedicine appointment today, and my practitioner was wearing a mask. And I showed up and I said, gee, I feel like I need to put on a mask. And she said, no, don't worry about it. We just have to wear one around here. I said, I get it. I just feel like, you know, solidarity because, you know, I appreciate you. But at this point in time, there's nothing other than mean-spirited selfishness to define anyone who will not wear a mask in this country. And so I give props to Taylor Swift. And maybe, I don't know, but she told Entertainment Weekly about her grandpa who fought in the Second World War. I did a lot of research on my grandfather in the beginning of quarantine, and it hit me very quickly that we've got a version of that trauma happening right now in our hospitals. And she said, God, you hope people would respect it and would understand that going out for a night isn't worth the ripple effect that it causes. But obviously, we're seeing that a lot of people don't seem to have their eyes open to that, or if they do, a lot of people don't care, which is upsetting. So Taylor Swift used her considerable voice for good. And good on her. But meanwhile, you've got the Rick Santellis. You've got Rudy Giuliani, who has an active case of the damned virus, sitting coddled in Georgetown Hospital, receiving the best care that money and science can provide, and calls into a radio station and says it's possible to overdo mask wearing. And shame on that woman behind the microphone who says, well, Rudy, I mean, you're an expert in this. Why did, for not saying, well, Rudy, you're an expert in this. Explain to us how you can overmask. We want to hear that, Rudy. Tell us all about the overmasking. But of course, we know what the answer is. Overmasking is when your witness in Michigan shows up with a mask on and won't take it off and thereby gets your ass chewed out by COVID Caligula. But probably the most disgusting of the stories I've run across today comes from Arizona, Stan, where Joe Biden won. It's Safe Harbor Day, everybody. And Trump is done. Now, he's probably committing felonies by asking various state elected officials to interfere in the election itself and declare him the winner by some sort of fiat. Damn things don't run worth a shit. You don't want to declare anything by a fiat. Won't get you where you're going. Sorry, couldn't resist. But he's lambasted COVID. Caligula has. He's lambasted Governor Ducey, who's a loyal maggot in Arizona. He's lambasted loyal maggot Brian Kemp in Georgia. And what he's finding out is that after observing him for 4 years, that although they were a little slow to a little o-slay on the uptake, these maggot governors and other officials have finally figured out that there's no percentage in throwing yourself on your sword for Donald Trump because there's no gratitude. There's no win to that. And so, Arizona, Stan. Where the official Twitter account of the Arizona Republican Party are calling on other Arizonans to die for Donald Trump. When who knows how many Arizonans already willingly or unwillingly have. Was it Nevada or Arizona that the couple was from who ran out and consumed fish tank cleaner because it contained chloroquine and the woman survived, but the husband died? The Arizona GOP Twitter account actually sent out at AZGOP. This is what we do, who we are. Live for nothing or die for something. Then there's the ditto head and I'm beginning to think well, is this Brent Terhune?
Hi Russ, it's great to be here. I'm going to try to hold myself together and not get emotional here, but I want to harken back to your statement about Georgia.
Yeah.
And about the Trump voter.
Yeah.
And they should be very afraid, very afraid. Trump and you are all we have left, Rush. We've spent our lives voting for these people because they're not them. And we just can't do it anymore. We're tired of being stabbed in the back, Rush. It's better to have an enemy that's in front of you than a friend that's behind you that's just going to stab you. They do it every time. We have a Republican-controlled state, and they won't do an audit of the vote. They won't. They just basically told every Georgian that they don't care. We were in Washington on Saturday. Me and my 33-year-old son, we saw more people than we've ever seen in our lifetime, ever. And we're season ticket holders for the Ravens, for God's sakes. I've been in crowds of 80,000 people. I've been to Steelers games, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, wait a minute. I don't think this is Brent Terhune. This may be real. He saw more people in Washington, D.C. than he's ever seen in his life. I presume that was at that Proud Boys rally that might have had tops a couple of thousand people. But he's been to Ravens games, especially Ravens games when the Steelers show up. I mean, my God, Rush, my God. And, you know, Rush and Trump are all he has left. He mentions his son, but Trump and Rush are all he has left. Sunshine, that's the definition of a cult member right there. He's got his health. But Trump and Rush are all he has left. He's got enough money to have season tickets to the Ravens, but Trump and Rush are all he has left.
I have never seen so many people, but were there any Republicans there? No. None.
But wait. What? There were no Republicans. What was this thing that you went to?
A week ago Saturday in Washington, D.C., the mega rally. There must have been hundreds of thousands.
Okay, it's a mega rally, and there were, you mean no elected Republicans? Is that what you mean?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Our party leadership, quote unquote, if this were a Democrat rally, they would all be there. They were there for the anti-Tea Party movement, walking hand in hand up the steps.
Yep.
No one stands for us, Rush. Only you and Donald Trump. God forbid, what do we have left? I love my president. I am not a revolutionary, Rush, but I will die for my president. This man has given more to this country than anybody, and he has no need to. None. He's a billionaire. He doesn't need this.
That's exactly right.
It's disheartening.
Was that Brent Terhune? If it is the most masterful punk job that has ever been pulled on Flush Flimball. If it's satire, if it's parody, then okay. But that does not change what is coming out of the Arizona Twitter account. Live for nothing or die for something. And with a hashtag stop the steal, some dude named Ali says, I'm willing to give my life for this fight. We pledge our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. We will never stop fighting for the cause. I'm so proud of all you patriots. Well, here it is, Safe Harbor Day. Trump's done. Even Sammy Bad Breath Alito took a dump on him earlier this afternoon. And the maggots are losing their minds. An idiot maggot by the name of Ann Vandersteel tweeted, pray that the SCOTUS and Justice Alito have a constitutional outcome for what should stop the steal of PA voters. No. Sorry. And Sammy Bad Breath, who has jurisdiction over the Third United States Circuit, dismissed the ignorant, yet another dead loser from the Republican Party. Dismissed it out of hand. With no pushback from Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, no pushback from Brat Kavanaugh, no pushback from Amy COVID Barrett, the justice handmaid, no pushback from Ann's boy Neil. Nope, none. Supreme Court denies request to stop certification of Pennsylvania vote with no noted dissents. That should be good for a full-on purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy from QAnon. Yeah. They say they're willing to die for him. Well, I mean, if you're a psychopath, I guess that makes you feel better. But I guess the little Austrian corporal who was a bad impressionist painter and had a terrible Charlie Chaplin mustache. I guess he was gratified to know that Mrs. Whichever bumped her own children off in his name. for what comfort it was worth. A couple of days ago over at the Atlantic, an article by Dr. Casey Grew, an anesthesiologist at UCLA Health, said, you likely know that the number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 is surging across the country, but headlines from distant states do not capture the horror of a hospital without enough intensive care beds. I was an anesthesiology resident in a large academic medical center at the peak of the pandemic in New York City this spring. She said, I wrote regular email updates to friends and family. They showcase the frightening reality of what care looks like in an overwhelmed hospital. In another tweet, another doctor said, when the pandemic hit in New York City, we intubated 20 to 30 patients a day in our ER. It was so chaotic, we had intubation teams of anesthesiologists who ran from room to room. My colleague, Dr. Casey Grew, shares the horror we saw that headlines don't capture and refers to the Atlantic article. You can find it at theatlantic.com. Her last name is Grewe. In her diary, she noted on March 26th, on Tuesday night, one of my co-residents did 17 emergency intubations. Upon running to respond to yet another intubation page, she was horrified to see that the patient was one of our supervising physicians. Today, one of our surgeons was intubated. Off duty in my Upper West Side apartment, I hear an ambulance go by every 10 minutes. It's hard to sleep. Thirteen days later, she wrote, it's truly a scene from a science fiction movie. My team is responsible for the care of 12 ventilated patients. Of the 12, six are age 50 or under. Most are showing no signs of progress. One is a relatively young person who's been intubated for more than 10 days. We became optimistic that this patient, who had been breathing well with little support from the ventilator, could be disconnected from the machine. On Monday morning, we removed the breathing tube, but the patient quickly deteriorated, and we had to re-intubate. Too much horror. Too much horror. And we'll be a while a long while getting over it. Yeah, thanks, Lou. I did the January 5th reminder at the very beginning of the program. Thanks for sending it along. Jeremy in Vermont says, I think it is Brent Terhune calling Rush, voice modulator. Maybe, or maybe he's just good enough at using a different voice. I don't know any way of finding out. Maybe some enterprising member of the Horn Family Community Congregation can sort that. Darlene in Connecticut, subject line, Andrew Weissman said in an interview on Rachel's show last night, I believe it was, that yes, Trump is committing felonies trying to strong-arm Republican governors and others in overturning the election results. Weissman also called for the new AG that Biden appoints to investigate Trump once he's left office. This prompted Lindsey Graham to threaten that if the GOP retains control of the Senate, that he will not approve any Biden AG nominee that does not attest in the hearing that she or he won't investigate Trump. Glenn Kirshner in his Team Justice YouTube video called Lindsey an accessory if he does that. The law for that is on the books. You could hear the mind-numbing fear in Graham's voice and inflections when he said that on Fox News. What on earth is Lindsey afraid of, Darlene asks. What does Trump have on him? He knows Trump will take him down. I think we know what he has. Because I go back to something all the way back to the dim and dark days of 2017. In the run-up to the election, WikiLeaks, with help from the Russian government, released a treasure trove of emails from hacked DNC servers. We also know they hacked the RNC. They still have those emails. They still have that data. They still have God knows what. And it is unreleased. Because you see, blackmail material is no longer of value once it is in the public realm, public domain. It is the threat of it becoming public that gives it coin in the realm. That's how that works. And so, what specifically, Darlene? I don't know. Dead boy, live boy. And the, what is it? What was the moniker that the people threatening to out him were using? I tend to think it's more probably got more to do with money than it does sex. Because Lindsay's sexuality is an open secret in South Carolina, Stan. There was an awful lot of money that got passed through the National Ruble Association and into the coffers of various and sundry Republicans of power and influence. But I think today we will look back on today as a big day. I imagine that Nitwit Nero, as he has been for a month now, is raging around the White House, coming unglued. He makes he makes Richard Nixon with a belly full of phenobarbital and bourbon look like a Sunday school teacher, babbling at the paintings. Oh, they didn't understand me, Henry. They just didn't understand. It was the Jews, Henry, the Jews. Passed out on his couch. I mean, there are historical references to that. And yet teetotaler Trump, sober as the day is long, if you don't count the Adderall, is an absolute wreck. I wouldn't be surprised if even now, if now that maybe some people are saying, 25th Amendment? Because he's a paper tiger now. Except, of course, for the, you know, nuclear football and all that. No, I haven't gotten there yet, but I planned on it, and now I will, Suman. Suman says, Tex ass, I'm late to today's show. My apologies if you already covered this Ken Paxton idiot from Texas and his lawsuit to overturn the election. Am I wrong, or do these idiots wake up every day, look in the mirror, and say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the best maggot of them all? Me. They're all trying to out-maggot each other now. Makes me go nuts. I must honestly thank this community for keeping me sane. Well, thank you for being part of the community that we all keep each other sane, Suman. And you are much appreciated as well. What are we talking about here? Well, the fact of the matter is the Attorney General of Texas has tried to intervene in the election, stating that Texas has jurisdiction to declare what the electoral outcome should be in places like Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and, you know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. hey, that's a good suggestion from John in North Carolina, Stan. I neglected something, but I'm about to correct it. Jesus, the ego of Ken Paxton and him under federal investigation and indictment. Damn. I mean, he was, isn't he still? don't you think? Yeah. Sammy Bad Breath Alito with no dissent. No dissent whatsoever from any of his maggot brethren. Sammy Bad Breath Alito tossed out the suit seeking to overturn the will of the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And John's right. That called for something.
They have proven it. And they have people that lead in laughter. You just go ahead first. And like I said, a merry heart does good like a medicine. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha. Ha, 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 ha. The Associated Press said that Joe Biden is president. Ha, ha.
Yeah, that was called for. But here's the thing. There's something else that goes with that. In that particular clip, he's explaining that sort of holy laughter or whatever. And when he starts laughing, he is less than three. He's not wearing a mask. Of course he's not. Because his daughter's an anti-vaxxer who started a measles mini-epidemic in Texas. He's not wearing a mask. And neither are any of the poor, benighted fools who attend his... I mean, how much do you reckon you got to give to Kenneth Copeland to get a seat in the front row? You probably got to pony up more cheddar than you would to get a front row seat to a Rolling Stones concert. And that ain't cheap, brethren and sistren. And he's laughing and projecting and spewing and particle spraying. And there's people in the front rows. One of them's got a beard just to soak up some extra particles. Just literally taking it all in. On the other hand, answering Darlene's question, Brother Deacon Asa says, what do they have on him, you ask? Man in mouth, Darlene. Man in mouth. I'm not so sure, Brother Deacon. It doesn't have the... I mean, unless there's something really, really... weird involved, like maybe, I don't know, Alex Jones sent him one of those monkey jellyfish hybrids from the wet markets of old Kowloon. But unless it's something that just, well, you know, Dirty Sanchez, Rusty Trombone, Cleveland Steamer. Don't look them up. How many times do I have to tell you don't look them up? I've already taken one from the team. Do not look those up. Then maybe. It's kind of like the sensationalism of the idea of a pee-pee tape, which I will forever believe is a real, actual thing. Agnes, on the other hand, says, I'm with Asa. I'd say, young man. It's possible. It is. Oh, by the way, just in case, Megan, Lindsey Graham blackmail material. I thought it was the threat of releasing the fact that Lindsey Graham, a.k.a. Lady G, and it's Lady G, thank you earlier, Darlene, not only has been soliciting male prostitutes for sex, but that these prostitutes were also underage. That would be the one that would get him, because that's the one that gets you time in the stir. Remember the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican senator from Oklahoma who got caught in a motel with an underage boy with some weed in the backpack and what? And, well, he went up the river. It's that underage thing that'll get you. So that's a possibility. But, you know, the Russians are famous for leveraging a couple of things. Money, sex, and debt. And quite often, one or two or all three will go hand in hand. Yeah, there he is. Yes, thank you, Lou, serving as an ad hoc member of the Horn Research Department this evening. Jackass Ken Paxton. Headline, Texas Attorney General is accused by top aides of abusing his office. Ken Paxton, one of the most prominent conservative attorneys general, is already under indictment. The allegations of impropriety raised in a recent letter draw intense new scrutiny. Thank you for that, Lou. As to Kenneth Copeland, Jude in the Great Northwest says, in his diabolical and phony laugh, it manifests an example of one disgusting prick. I rarely use such verbiage. And it's true, Jude doesn't use such verbiage very often, but, you know, when it's warranted, Jude says, I rarely use such verbiage, but in his case, it must be stated. Or, in his case, she'll make an exception. Yes. That's a cowbell for Jude. Judicial toss-a-thon. Scott in San Diego says, is it me, Bob, or have the courts, state, federal, and now supreme, been tossing out bogus cases faster than Trump was pitching paper towels in Puerto Rico? Ooh. That'd be grand. That was a good one. You've had a call that you can't spell believe without a lie in the middle. That was pro. That was all the way out of the playing area, past the cheap seats in center field, and busted a windshield in the parking lot. That's what that was. Come on, says Lou. Trump knows family values. Lady G is, well, gay. As to L. Rushbo, Scott noted, I'm really pulling for him, Bob. I pray that he lives until shortly after noon on January the 20th. I just want him to witness Joe Biden and Kamala Harris being sworn in. Yeah, and, oh, he'll probably outlive us all. As to, it's that underage thing that gets you, Brother Deacon Asa, earning a cowbell, says, too many sound effects. That was the emergency bottle of yuzu hot sauce tumbling. It's still safe. As to, it's that underage thing that gets you every time, Brother Deacon Asa says, unless you're Iwanka's dad. Ow! Ooh, that's going to leave a mark. Yeah. But no, seriously, this is conversation radio. And if you would care to, you are more than welcome to join in the conversation. Don't be shy. We seldom have people faint dead away on during calls here. If you can't feel at ease calling this program, I don't know what program you could feel at ease calling. So, you know, that. 844-843-4676, that's the stress line. 304-574-8178 comes in on the Skype line, as does Bob Kincaid at gmail.com. You are more than welcome. And there's a little bit more than a half hour to go in the program. So if I've missed something that's just burning you up, stand not on the order of your calling, but call it once. I won't say dialing because there's no more dialing. That's a dead giveaway of geezerhood. Yeah. Oh, what else? Oh, there's a lot else. My senior senator from West Virginia found his way to my filthy morning habit this morning. But he was quite fashionable, I gotta say. I got to find out where he's getting his West Virginia flag face masks. I thought it was a good look for Joe Manchin. And look, you give credit where credit's due. And that, and there he was with the flag, you know, with the seal, kind of the seal, but the design of the flag just right over his beak and his, and his pie hole. Montani Semper Liberi, y'all. And blathering away about how we got to have this stimulus bill. And we do. But here's the most essential problem there. People got no money. People need money. There are no $1,200 checks in that $908 billion. And, well, the de facto tyrant of the United States, the most wicked, evil, awful, and malignant man in this country, Moscow Mitch McConnell, he's still got his heels dug in on the idea of $500 billion, and anybody who ever gave him a nickel gets immunity from any kind of lawsuit forevermore. I mean, I'm overstating it a little bit, but not by a hell of a lot. And you really can't just immunize every negligent Tom, Dick, and Harry in America as the ransom price for not starving people to death. But that's what Mitch McConnell wants. Yeah. It remains to be seen, but the time is decidedly running out. It's gotten so bad in Texas that even the White House COVID-19 task force, now minus Dr. Atlas, is begging the state of Texas to please warn people how serious this disease is. A task force report issued on Sunday said if state and local policies do not reflect the seriousness of the current situation, all public health officials must alert the state population directly. They say that anybody over 65, anybody with what science calls comorbidities, increased risk of contracting the virus, they should all have their groceries delivered, other necessities as well. They should avoid any indoor public spaces where people are unmasked. But that's just that, you know, that avoid spaces where people are unmasked is not just for people with comorbidities. It's for anybody who doesn't want the disease. Because the unmasked people will eventually get it, whether they die or whether they're just made badly sick or maybe whether they just have a mild case, is immaterial. Because once they get it, they spread it. The report from the Coronavirus Task Force went on to say the COVID risk to all Americans is at a historic high. We're in a very dangerous place due to the current extremely high COVID baseline and limited hospital capacity. It was bad enough that around Thanksgiving, curfews were imposed in El Paso, San Antonio. And this piece of grim information. Anybody under 40 who gathered with people outside their immediate household during Thanksgiving, and this is chilling, should assume you became infected. The report went on, and God only knows who needs to hear this. Most likely you will not have symptoms. However, you are dangerous to others and you must isolate away from anyone at increased risk for severe disease and get tested immediately. That's anyone under 40. That's pretty much from newborn to 40. Meanwhile, Governor Greg Abbott in Texas continues his campaign of relentless criminal, willful, wanton, and reckless disregard for human life. But I don't want you to think that it's all bad news. This is downright interesting. The story goes back to late August, but that's okay. We need this kind of news more than ever. Down at the University of South Carolina, you know, the Gamecocks, you know their motto there. I know Todd and David in South Carolina, Stan, know that unofficial motto. They released three separate studies. Scientists at USC did, not the University of Southern California. And in each of the three studies, the researchers involved reached a similar conclusion. The thing about COVID-19 that makes people so desperately ill so often is referred to by its initials, ARDS, A-R-D-S, Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome. Among the things that it does to you, even if it doesn't kill you, is to leave massive long-term scarring in lung tissue, which will leave you vulnerable to other diseases down the road. Horrifyingly, ARDS has about a 43% mortality rate. For every 100 people that get COVID-19 and develop ARDS, 43 of them die. But how about this? All three studies showed that tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, can prevent the onset of ARDS. Now, I would think that smoking would kind of make your lungs more irritated. You know that old saying, got to cough to get off. So I don't know what the delivery mechanism was. But THC stimulates the growth of healthy lung bacteria. Curiously, South Carolina is one of those places where you can be put away for a long damn time for as much as for as little as a doobie. The three studies were published in Frontiers in Pharmacology, British Journal of Pharmacology, and the International Journal of Molecular Sciences. And they discuss, the papers do, dozens of experiments in which ARDS was triggered in laboratory mice, and they then received THC in an injectable form. And according to the results of the studies, 100% of the mice well, they recovered and survived. That's kind of amazing. Might be actually nice, considering that we're testing every other, seemingly every other drug out there to see if it'll work. Wouldn't it be nice if we just nationally decriminalized cannabis so that peer-reviewed science could be done on that? Prakash Nagarkoti told the state, the paper in South Carolina, the underlying mechanism with ARDS is your immune system goes haywire and starts destroying your lungs and all your other organs. It's like a car where you're pulling on putting on a lot of accelerator, but the brakes aren't working. Basically, what's going to happen is your car is going to crash because you can't stop it, and that's basically what's happening with ARDS. Now, mice aren't humans. But still. Professor Nagarkoti did go on to warn, if you do get the Rona, that does not mean to honk up a number. I just want to make sure our research is not interpreted as marijuana is good for COVID-19. If you start using THC early on, it might worsen the effect because it suppresses the immune system. Edibles? Not trying to be facetious, but, you know, damn. We tried, you know, we tried a, what?
Hydroxychloroquine, bleach.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that explains the screw loose audio from Rudy Giuliani at the beginning of this program. Maybe he was. What do the hip young kids say these days? Maybe Rudy was turnt. At this point in time. Yeah, who freaking knows? Well, I've already made a believer out of Sparky, though. Dry herb vaporizer works for me. Somehow I suspected Sparky that it would. Oh, and serving as the Horn ad hoc, one of the Horn ad hoc research department members, Sparky did some digging around. The caller to Rush was apparently not Brent Terhune. I don't know why you didn't hear the clip. That's bizarre. But Brent's from Indiana, and he's a Colts fan. Well, he could pretend to be a Ravens fan, couldn't he? I feel that's true. Okay. Cowbell for Earther. You know, Bob, some humans are very rat-like. That does take that certainly takes Rudy into account, doesn't it? I guess it's good that sorry, doing two or three things at one time. Trumptanic Tuesdays can get a little bit overwhelming. And speaking of which, how about some... There it is. You know, yesterday we focused on one of my favorite political slogans in all of American politics. Mo Brooks! Les Brames! And so today, his handlers lost track of him long enough for him to stumble and stagger and fall, find his way down to the well of the House of Representatives, where he unleashed a tirade. Get the hockey puck. This one here is for the ages. You've been warned. Okay? Okay.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Alabama, Mr. Brooks, for 5 minutes.
Gentleman is used loosely.
Mr. Speaker, this is my fifth speech in a series on voter fraud, election theft, and the presidential election.
For emphasis, Congress is the judge, jury, and final arbiter of the 2020 presidential election contest. Further, America's election system is plagued by systemic flaws that promote voter fraud and election theft. Joe Biden exploited one such flaw when he brazenly promised more than 10 million illegal aliens that he will give them amnesty and citizenship if they help elect Joe Biden president.
He did no such thing, and there really ought to be a rule about telling bald-faced lies in the well of the House, but well, I guess that went out of fashion with high-button Greaves or something.
The Constitution's Election Clause, Article 1, Section 4, is very clear. Congress has absolute authority over the, quote, times, places, and manner of holding elections, end quote, for federal offices.
Which they had done and have to live with.
Pursuant to the Election Clause and Title II, United States Code, Section 7, Congress set November 3rd as the 2020, quote, day for the election, end quote.
He's quoting, day for the election, quote.
Quote. For emphasis, Congress set a, quote, day for the election on which citizens vote. Congress did not set an election week, an election month, or an election season during which citizens can cast votes.
So absentee ballots, all those absentee ballots from all of those members of the military in places like South Korea and Germany and aboard the ships at sea and Greenland and you get the idea. Japan, far-flung countries in Africa like Somalia, Qatar, yeah, no vote for them.
Also pursuant to the Election Clause, Congress created limited exceptions to its vote within a 24-hour window mandate, to wit, alternative voting means for persons with disabilities. Overseas persons may vote by absentee ballot.
Maybe. But only if you're overseas. Not if you don't want to get the Rona.
Expected to be absent from their voting location or state on election day may vote by absentee ballot. Any voting schemes that allow voting outside of congressionally mandated times and means are illegal under the Constitution and federal statute.
You know, if you put a pair of velvet knee breeches on him, you can almost pretend that he's speaking in 1858 or 1860. Maybe election of Abraham Lincoln or some such.
Congress's reasons for limiting voting to one 24-hour period are described by the 2005 Bipartisan Commission on Federal Election Reform, co-chaired by Democrat President Jimmy Carter and former Republican White House Chief of Staff and Secretary of State James Baker.
Notice how he punched Democrat Jimmy Carter. I'm surprised he didn't spit on the ground.
They strongly cautioned against overly broad absentee ballot and vote-by-mail schemes because they, quote, increase the risk of fraud, end quote.
Whoever his aide is so proud of himself for coming up with this, next best thing to an ordinance of secession. God, this man's stupid.
The Bipartisan Commission found that absentee voting has been one of the major sources of fraud in American elections and that vote by mail, quote, is vulnerable to abuse in several ways. Blank ballots mailed to the wrong address or to large residential buildings might get intercepted. Citizens who vote at home, at nursing homes, at the workplace, or in church are more susceptible to pressure, overt and subtle, or to intimidation.
Huh? So what do you call what happens on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or over there at Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, or news muck? Because you do know they take this survey about every year or so. And people who watch Fox News TV Radio Rwanda actually know less about how American government works and what the news of the day is, I guess, than people who watch the Cartoon Network. And adding insult to injury, of course, there's the recent information that if you watch Fox News, you're considerably more likely to come down with the Rona. Ah, suddenly Mitch McConnell wanting all that immunity from lawsuit, the stuff included in the relief package, begins to make a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Vote buying schemes are far more difficult to detect when citizens vote by mail, end quote. Mr. Speaker, Congress passed laws to prevent voter fraud and election theft by establishing, with minor exceptions, a 24-hour window in which to vote. In contrast, socialist Democrats use bureaucratic allies.
Socialist Democrats. God damn it, Mo Brooks, Les Brames. You left out the pinko, commie, fascist, Rosicrucian, Illuminati part. I hate it when they take shortcuts.
Or engaged in rigged lawsuits involving conspiratorial parties and inattentive judges to obtain sham settlement agreements that blatantly violate the Constitution and federal law to promote voter fraud and election theft with the singular goal of stealing the United States presidency.
But not stealing your election, right, Mo? Not stealing Tommy Tuberville's election. Not stealing any of the election that went to a Republican anywhere in the country, right, Mo Brooks, Les Brames? Damn, that is one stupid conspiracy. Hey, we're going to leave all the Republicans in power everywhere else. We're just going to take the presidency. That'll work great for us. Whew. You know, there's something about Mo Brooks, Les Brames that makes me just absolutely rock solid certain that he wears tasseled loafers or something like that with his representing suits and whatnot. Because I got a feeling he'd hang himself if he had a pair of shoes with laces, and not on purpose.
In particular, all en masse vote-by-mail schemes promote voter fraud and election theft and are illegal.
Blow me. Agnes and I both voted by absentee ballot because we didn't want to go out and get the Rona, because we live in one of those states where people would rather cough on you and display their tobacco crumb-covered tongues than try not to get the disease. And I can guarantee you that there was not a nickel's worth, a penny's worth of fraud in the decisions that we made. Because, again, there's that conspiracy. We voted pretty much a straight Democratic ticket. And, well, 7 out of 10 of our fellow West Virginians voted the exact opposite way. Yeah, oops. But, of course, there was vote by mail in Alabama. There was vote by mail in Georgia. There was vote by mail in Texas. There was vote by, hell, how many absentee ballots do you think went for the tyrant Mitch McConnell in Kentucky Stan? How many absentee ballots you reckon went for that noted Republican moderate Susan Collins in Maine? Yeah? Next time I get down Homeway, I think I'm just going to pay attention when I'm out and about and just try to get a general composite picture of the kind of person who has sent Mo Brooks, Les Brames to Washington, D.C. and returned him there every time he's run since. Because that congressional district is worthy of our consideration. I touched on it briefly yesterday. There's a center of technology in Madison County, Alabama, Huntsville, where you got a lot of brains. You got a lot of smarts. And there's a lot of smarts over in the Muscle Shoals area, too.
And somehow or another, this is the best that they can come up with. Mo Brooks, Les Brames. And pardon the crassness of it, that just beats cats fucking. The University of Alabama, Huntsville. Alabama A&M University. The University of North Alabama. And probably a couple of others that I can't think of right off the top of my head. Redstone Arsenal. NASA. Literal rocket factories. And the best they can come up with is Mo Brooks, Les Brames. Does that indicate a deeper problem in this country? And I know it's been talked about in the past, but why do the Mo Brookses run and win when the people with IQs twice that of Mo Brooks, Les Brames, couldn't get elected dog catcher? And don't be engaging in any hubris or anything and thinking that somehow or another this doesn't apply all over the country. It does. Why is it that the only people who get elected to office are the people with some sort of pathological desire for power? Wouldn't it be fun to see the donor list for Mo Brooks, Les Brames? I mean, he's a member of Congress, so what do you want to bet? He's getting money from those technology companies in Huntsville at the same time that he makes a place like Huntsville less attractive to relocate to every time he opens his idiot mouth. Jesus, this man is a moron. Truly, he is a Trumptanic intellect. God almighty.
Because they violate Congress's election procedures in 24-hour voting mandate. As such, all votes cast pursuant to these vote-by-mail schemes are illegal, void, and should not be counted. Mr. Speaker, the evidence is overwhelming, compelling, and irrefutable. If only lawful votes cast by eligible American citizens are counted, President Trump won the Electoral College and a second term as president. Congress can either support illegal voting, voter fraud, and election theft, or not. Because I believe in the rule of law and our republic, it is my duty as a member of Congress to, on January the 6th, object to and vote to reject the Electoral College submissions of all states whose election systems are so badly flawed as to render their vote submissions unreliable, untrustworthy, and unworthy of acceptance. And, Mr. Speaker, that is exactly what I intend to do.
Well, it'd be good for you, Mo Brooks, Les Brames. You're going to make a lot of friends, especially among those Republican colleagues of yours who needed those absentee ballots in order to either get to Congress or remain in Congress. There's an interesting, okay. The Mo Brooks summary. Miscellaneous defense, top industries 2019 to 2020. Miscellaneous defense, 52,600. Real estate, 45,150. The House, top contributors, the House Freedom Fund, 13,800. Hometown lenders, 11,200. Oh, but here's the fun part. He raised $625,788. Get this. Now, this is no small district, but it's got good media. It's got good media coverage, good media saturation. He spent $203,635 out of $625,000 raised.
He has cash on hand, $1,114,335 and zero debt. Good God, is there not a progressive out there who could, some progressive limousine liberal who could fund an attack on Mo Brooks and immediately raise the collective IQ of that congressional district by probably 100 points? Defense aerospace, health professionals. Yeah. 58.41% of his contributions came from large individual contributions, $369,651. PACs gave him $250,000. Less than $200 at a time only came to $13,166. He self-financed not a penny. Thank you, Ralphs. That is eye-opening. And that's how we just lose so star-spangled awesome in places like the South. Note coming in from Cynthia in the Bay Area. Attempted to call, but I'd probably end up coughing into the phone with my asthma more than I would be talking. This always seems to be the worst time of year for me with my asthma. Last night, my lungs felt irritated enough that I wondered if I had the COVID myself. I took my temperature, but as usual, I was running a bit on the low side, 97. No fever there. But I also wonder if I may have ARDS given all those years from the flu. It always left me suffering from bronchitis for months, and I'm sure that's damaging. But wouldn't you know it, last night, I dreamt that I called into your program. And then the next thing I know, I'm there with you along with a lot of members of the head-on community at a great big get-together. Dreams are strange, though. I kept asking everyone what their names were, but no one would tell me, even though everyone knew my name. Darn! That dream wasn't fair to me. Oh, well, just a dream. Maybe not always, Cynthia. Someday this shit's going to be over and we are going to have a horn in. We are. Yes. And it's going to be tasty, and it's going to be a blast. And maybe the brand-new Secret Sandwich Society will be built by then, so people can understand why it is that I went on about them so rapturously. I haven't had a decent French fry since the place burned. Ugh. The horror. The horror. So we've got a brief amount of time remaining in the program, and I just need to note that we are in a $550 hole that will become an $850 hole by prayer meeting Wednesday. It would be magnificent if we could knock out that $250 so it's only a $600 hole, or any portion thereof. Because there are a terrifying boatload of bills to be paid. So for anybody who jumps in, thank you. Thank you in advance. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Among the living.
I asked that reflexively. I know that nobody wants to answer that question because they'll tell you. They'll tell you exactly how they are. I was holding off as much as I could not to call because I've become more aware that more people need to call than just me. But since nobody did, here I are. I am referring to an article entitled, so that people can look it up for themselves, "The Lobbyist Who Made You Pay More at the Drugstore." And it's from BillMoyers.com. It's from a few years ago. And it concerns a big bill. See, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, I don't like to hear these fuckers talking about bending rules, so supposedly, so that people have an easier way to go when voting or they have more time to vote or anything like that. We're talking about the populace in the midst of a fucking pandemic. Don't lecture me about accommodating people to cast votes, because this article, "The Lobbyist Who Made You Pay More at the Drugstore," has to do with that infamous Friday, November 21st, 2003, just before the Thanksgiving break, when they in the House voted on some big bill that would benefit Big Pharma. And they gave the well over 1,000 pages in this fucking bill, first of all. They gave the representatives a scant few hours to read and digest and understand the implications of the bill. And there was a 15-minute, one-quarter-hour voting time frame on the floor. And they didn't get enough votes. They needed something like 218 votes to pass this fucking bill in the wee hours of the morning. So here's some gentlemen from the, I use that term loosely, gentlemen from the past, Billy Tawson, Mr. Hastert, and Mr. DeLay said, well, we'll just freeze the clock. We'll let the voting go on for as long as it takes to get the 218 votes needed to satisfy our corporate masters in Big Pharma. Give me a break. Don't lecture me about.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
You remember? I knew that you would. I knew that you would. And
clocks? We don't need no stinking clocks.
Yeah, and there was the article references that somehow the C-SPAN cameras were frozen temporarily, so that the visual of lobbyists actually going onto the floor of the House.
Carrying checks.
Yes, carrying checks. I'm going to, after we're through talking, I'll send you this piece, because it's a very long piece and it goes into exquisite detail. But when you were playing that audio of this fool getting up there talking about time limits and you know, following rules and stuff, I just couldn't resist.
Well, you know, you remind me of something from way back when I was having a cup of coffee in law school, Scott.
Yes.
When you take contracts class, maybe Rick or Darlene or Steve or all of the above, Lou maybe, will remember this, but when you take contracts, you learn about a case called Hadley versus Baxendale. Amazing how this shit sticks with you. The things they do to your brain. And it's an early English contract case. It establishes several principles.
We won't go great names back then.
We won't go into we won't go into the principles. But I remember my contracts professor saying, "All right, Hadley versus Baxendale. Okay." And apparently this is a case about mills and time. And I don't know anything about mills or time, but I do know when it's Miller time. And I imagine he told that every year, and it always got a big laugh.
Yeah.
But that's every, how... there was a certain genius. There was a certain genius to what he was doing, because, by God, I still remember Hadley versus Baxendale, don't I?
You sure do. And now we hear about it.
Or Cordes versus Peerless Transportation, in which a trial court judge in New York City oh so many years ago wrote his opinion in verse. No, he didn't write that in verse. He wrote it in, apparently he had been to see a Shakespeare play the night before. And the language is nothing if not florid. And then there's the equity case out of England that has to do with the What Tut Tut Review. And it's a case about tortious interference in business relations and labor law. And it has to do with a traveling chorus of underpaid female performers called the What Tut Tut Review, and a guy named Jack Lug tried to organize them and got in deep shit with the theater operators and, you know, the usual money.
Yeah.
And some young, and he must have gone on to a fabulous legal career, because he briefed all of his, and he was at Harvard, I think. He briefed all of his cases in verse. And it begins, the ladies of the chorus, and the chancellor writing says they were forced by virtue of their low pay to engage in an older and less noble profession. And so in briefing the case, the young wag at Harvard said the ladies of the chorus of the What Tut Tut Review by economic necessity were forced their virtue to eschew. And that's how I learned to use the word eschew. and it ends up with, because the chancellor goes on and says, and they were forced by this unfortunate necessity to live in the company of several odorous and malformed dwarfs. And so at the brief of the case, the young man has one of the ladies of the chorus of the What Tut Tut Review declare, if Snow White can live with seven dwarfs, then I can live with one. I'm sorry.
No,
I apologize for all of that, but it's your fault.
I must look this up because, see, who knew but you, Bob, that there is humor and entertainment to be found even in old, dry legal cases.
Oh, Jesus, but there are.
Jeez.
And
if you're only watching Perry Mason reruns like I've been doing, you're missing half the fun, more than half of the fun.
Oh, way more.
Jeez.
You know, I was checking out MeTV today, and I found out, because, you know, we've been on this Mandalorian kick here. And I'd mentioned it, and I think, you know, the show is just so damned old that, you know, I'm going to get shit for this, but there's hardly a single element of any Star Wars story that isn't stolen from somewhere else.
Well, there's only like seven basic plot lines in all of literature.
Well, I'm of the opinion that The Mandalorian is a reboot of a show that I'm sure you remember. When I say the name Richard Boone.
Oh, Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yeah.
Is that right?
The Paladin.
Paladin, yes.
The Mandalorian, you used to know the theme song, yes. I remember having it.
I used to know the business card that they would show, Wire Paladin. And I forget where, but you didn't have phones, I don't guess, in that stage.
Yeah, yet. And he had some sort of insignia carved on his holster, but
it's like a chess piece, like a whatever the horse piece is in a chess set.
Yeah.
I think.
The Knight.
The Knight, yes, thank you.
Well, I'm convinced that The Mandalorian is a reboot of that. And so MeTV has a, you know, notify me when it's on and playing. So I'm just going to check that out.
There's a lot of old shows. A lot of them are, you know, quite good. I mean, well written.
I could probably lose my mind watching MeTV. I guess I'm just old enough for that now. That you know what I found myself watching for just a couple of, you know, about an hour earlier today, just because something inside me went, wait, what? I went on YouTube and I looked up Love American Style.
Oh no, stop it.
And I found an episode featuring, of all people, Burt Reynolds.
Damn.
And you know, they were little short pieces. Another one featured Jackie Coogan and a probably no more than 21-year-old Kurt Russell.
Yeah. Well, that show, its claim to fame had to do a lot of the times with not washed up, but actors way past their prime, giving them something to do, and newcomers. You know, Stars of Tomorrow.
Well, you know what hit TV series came out of that, right?
Out of Love American Style?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't offhand.
Happy Days.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Love and the TV.
Yeah.
Because all the episodes began with Love and. I don't know what drove me to that, but
No.
And the first season, the theme song was sung by the Cowsills.
Wow.
But it was every subsequent season, it was sung by some other group of singers who also were famous for, well, they did the theme song for Happy Days.
The Low Page Studios Singers, Inc.
There you go. All right, I'm out of here, Scott.
All right, well, I'm going to stay here, but I'll send you that that link to that article.
I will read it. I will read it eagerly.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, later. Bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott wrapping things up. It's been an enjoyable program for me. I hope it was for you. Hey, thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly to Paul, taking us down to 5:40 to go. So that gets us down to 8:40 for tomorrow. That's huge, and much gratitude. Thank you so very much for jumping in, Paul. And so, thank you all of you who keep this program on the air with your subscriptions, both to Patreon and PayPal, and your a la carte contributions. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island, and thank you to Jeremy, and happy birthday to Jeremy. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you to Paul. Thank you very kindly. That's how this program stays on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. That's Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Head on .live. Head on .live being the best place to listen to your first run of Malloy. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home and you have to be out, limit your time out. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves. Hand sanitize your gloves before you take them off. Then hand sanitize your hands. Then take off your mask and re-sanitize your hands. Wash your hands as often as possible. Keep your social distance 10 feet at the least. Among people who are wearing masks, among those who are not, don't have anything to do with them. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, these socialist Democrat absentee mail-in ballot schemes is illegal because the Congress done said so, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.